Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
The MIA File, the ultimate Dolphins podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
Talking Dolphins, and from the Finnsider.com, Finn's Insider on Twitter is the way you find him. Matt Cannata joins us to talk about Miami. Matt, coming out of the Week 2 loss against the Patriots, frustrating for this team to not only be sitting 0-2, but to have maybe had an opportunity after Garoppolo went out and not be able to take advantage of it?
Yeah, very frustrating. I mean, you're coming off that week one heartbreaking loss to the Seahawks where they had the game in their hands. All they had to do was make a few stops on that final drive, and the game was won. And even earlier, the Kenny Stills dropped touchdown pass, a 70-yarder, and then the blocked field goal a little later on. The Dolphins were in every position to win that game against the Seahawks, so you would think that the momentum will ride over into the next week. It's meant to come out very flat against the Patriots. Just, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo looked like a Hall of Famer, all-pro quarterback in that first half. Just everything was going the Patriots' way. The Dolphins tried to do everything, and nothing was working. And then Garoppolo goes down, and you think the Dolphins have a little bit of hope, and they start driving, and they only get 3 points before the half. They had that costly turnover there before on one of the drives going into the halftime. And then they come out of halftime, and they start firing on all cylinders. They get up 31-24. They have about 45 seconds, 50 seconds to drive down and try to score a touchdown. Ultimately, they ran out of time, but, you know, very erratic play. It's what we've seen from the Dolphins over the past several years. And it just, you know, Dolphins fans have seen that a lot, and it just frustrates all of them.
When you look at this defense, we'll talk about the offense in a minute, but when you look at the defense, what changed in terms of what you saw, Matt, when we talk about a team that, you know, managed to hold Seattle to just 12 points and then turns around and gives up 31 to the Patriots? Did you see some places where they were exposed and the Patriots were taking advantage of some weaknesses? What changed there defensively from week one to week two?
Yeah, so I'm still waiting for the All-22 to come out on Game Pass, but from what I noticed with the naked eye right away was, you know, the Patriots are going short, intermediate slants, and the Dolphins are playing off man a lot of the times. And today, Vance Joseph, defensive coordinator, came out and said that they didn't want to press so much because they're afraid of getting burnt deep. The problem with the Dolphins cornerbacks, yes, they're tall, they're physical, they're big. They don't have the speed to keep up with these guys. So if they press them, they're going to get beat deep. If they play off, they're going to get hit across the middle. We all know the Patriots love to play that game. Move the sticks, complete the short pass, get the yards after the catch, and they do that all game long. The good thing that you look at here is, okay, so the Dolphins held the Patriots to rushing about 56 yards in the first half. The Patriots adjusted. They started doing sweeps to the outside. Dolphins couldn't stop that. So their defensive ends weren't able to set the edge on the run. Their linebackers were slow getting there. They couldn't get off their blocks. You know, just like, again, a lot of things going wrong for the Dolphins, and pretty much everything they tried did not work. They did have that great defensive effort against the Seahawks. The Seahawks did try to employ the short passing to begin the game, and then went intermediate and deep as the game went on. The Patriots stuck to that the entire time, and hopefully it's, you know, just because it's the Patriots and not something that we're going to see continue moving forward.
Were there any bright spots for you defensively, Matt?
No, you know, there wasn't a ton. We didn't get much pressure on the quarterback after abusing Russell Wilson last week in Seattle. Cameron Wakeley played about 19 snaps out of over 70, so we see his ages getting there. Mario Williams had 6 quarterback pressures. but you didn't hear his name called a lot either. The cornerbacks, Byron Maxwell, the cornerback they traded for this offseason, had a really rough day. The secondary, Rashad Jones, he's going to be well every single week. Ndamukong Suh led the team in tackles or something of that nature, had about, I think, 6 or 7 tackles as a defensive tackle, which is absolutely crazy. The defense has a lot of work to do this coming week to get ready for the Browns.
Well, and I think that, you know, you saw that, and part of it is you got to get the defense has got to get themselves off the field. They allowed the Patriots to go 7 for 14 when it comes to third downs, and that's something that when you look ahead, you just talked about it, and as you look at the schedule upcoming and taking on the Browns at home, that's something they're going to have to do against Cleveland, not give up those third down opportunities.
Absolutely, and if you stay on the field for third down, you just said it yourself, you're not going to win ball games. And yeah, you can look at the offense and say the offense put them in bad spots, and they did. You know, over the course of the game, it's very tough for a defense to stay on the field that long. And after a bunch of three and outs, especially in the first half, the Dolphins had a three and out, I think, every single drive. It's very tough for the defense to capitalize on that and to sustain their energy throughout the entire game. They need to complement each other, and that's what the Dolphins have had trouble doing, not just this year in these two games, but also over the past several years as well.
When you look at the offensive side of things, Ryan Tannehill, obviously with big numbers, but also a couple of interceptions. Matt, what did you see out of Tannehill in the loss to New England, either good or bad?
Yeah, Tannehill's been getting, taking a lot of heat on social media since yesterday, but I'm one of the ones who is going to continue to defend him. Adam Gase came out and said it himself. The offense had a lot of miscommunication in the first half. It's a brand new offense. Bruce Arians said it earlier this offseason. It takes 8 weeks for a new offense to gel. Adam Gase said it in the spring. It takes 5 weeks for a new offense to gel. So we're only in week two of the NFL regular season. So maybe I'm thinking that the coaches thought they could give it a little more and the players couldn't grasp it, couldn't handle it, couldn't execute it. The interesting thing is that Adam Gase said they didn't change anything in the second half in terms of what they were calling. They're going with the same stuff. The players are just executing better. So even though people will blame Tannehill for the first half woes, the fact of the matter is that he didn't have many options because of the breakdowns in communication and the route running and the blocking and so forth. The second half, we saw him go absolutely wild with the passing. Yes, he was playing from behind. Some people will say the Patriots are playing soft defense. While that may be true somewhat, it wasn't like he was making all the underneath throws. He was still throwing in tight windows. He was still making the correct reads, making the correct decisions. But again, with Ryan Tannehill, that's the thing, inconsistency. He has one good half, the next half, he plays stellar. 1 week he'll play stellar, the next week he'll absolutely bomb. So we'll see if Adam Gase can get him going in the right direction now.
We know as of right now when you and I record this, Matt, that Arian Foster's listed as day-to-day, had the groin injury. What do they need to do to get the running game going? What's the missing link, and where does Adam Gase go from here in the backfield?
Yeah, we know the Dolphins struck out and missed several times this offseason. They tried to get C.J. Anderson after losing Lamar Miller to Houston because he didn't want to match the $6 million Lamar Miller got. When C.J. Anderson, when the Broncos matched his offer, they tried to go after Matt Forte, but he was a little too expensive for them. They tried to go after Chris Johnson, but he went to Arizona instead. So really, the Dolphins have been fighting an uphill battle ever since then. Arian Foster, I don't think he's the answer. He's already nicked up. Long list of history of injury concerns. Looks slow back there, not decisive enough. Jay Ajayi is in the doghouse. There's actually rumors of the Dolphins trading him out. Someone mentioned today, Chris Kaufman mentioned that to keep an eye on the Kansas City backfield, the Dolphins might have some interest there as well. So you also got Kenyon Drake, the rookie, who showed some flashes against the Patriots. You also got Isaiah Pete, who's battling back from a hamstring injury, who looked really well in the preseason. So it's going to be interesting to see which way the Dolphins go with this. But Arian Foster, Jay Ajayi, don't believe are the answers for the Dolphins. They need to look at their reserves, deep into the reserves, or look for a trade possibly.
Matt, what would you do? Would you rather see them go with the young guys? Would you rather see them try to pull a trade?
I would rather see them try to pull a trade. I do like Kenyon Drake, but Isaiah Pete, I mean, let's be honest. You know, he's bounced around, and he is what he is, I think, at this point. Kenyon Drake has some flash, but he's more like a Theo Riddick type, catching passes out of the backfield. Not really a sustainable back who can carry the ball 25 to 30 times a game. I mentioned the Kansas City backfield. You have a loaded backfield there, Jamal Charles, Jakandrick West, Spencer Ware. One of them should be available. I would rather go after the young guys like West or Ware. But listen, if Jamal Charles can be taken for a low-round pick, I'm absolutely all for it.
So getting ready for the early game on Sunday, the home contest against Cleveland, what are you going to be looking for, Matt?
I'm going to be looking for the Dolphins to bounce back on the defensive side of the ball to really play with a sense of urgency. The Dolphins are catching some breaks with McCown out and, of course, RG3 out, so they're getting a rookie quarterback in there. I'll be looking for the offense to sustain their momentum and to keep it going. Based off the second half of the Patriots, they cannot afford another slow start where the defense is, you know, just on the field the entire time.
He's Matt Cannata from thefinsider.com on Twitter at @FinsInsider. Matt, always appreciate the insight with Miami. Thanks.
All right, thanks for having me.
That's Matt. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of 6 or 7 different coordinators, therefore 6 or 7 basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got 2 games under Carson Wentz's belt and 2 wins. Granted, 1 against Chicago, 1 against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule makers certainly made it certainly an easier pass for this rookie to start out when talking about the 2 teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something. But that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, you know, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, that's Julian Edelman, those are some pretty good inside targets to help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable. The good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple of weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. It's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the L.A. Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl run. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing, you talked about the running game, is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand-new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Viking defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good, but they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense, and Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball pretty well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards. His best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. The fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they wouldn't be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends, let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and send them, you know, throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact that he goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense, Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slimmed down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. But the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay, they like that no-huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense, control the clock a little bit more, and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and, of course, 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something in today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top 10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top 10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving core with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burress, and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out DealScore that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, they were great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you've followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrell Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrell Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right, final question in our six-pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's Coach of the Year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off, because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But, yeah, I mean, that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.